Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 108 of Season 7 of the Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Matthew Simpson, a freelance movie blogger, or movie reviewer.
All of those things are true. And yeah, once again, I am happy to be here.
Yeah, well, we're trying to figure out what's going on in John's mind and what Simon is going to do after telling them that life has its bonuses.
Yeah.
Minute 108 begins with Simon leaving the room as John starts laughing at him, and ends with John responding to Zeus's complaint. So we ended things yesterday with John asking Simon for a bottle of aspirin, which he tosses to him, and John just starts cackling, as this minute begins. It's great that Zeus must think that John is completely off his rocker at this point. Because what he's doing just makes no sense whatsoever. The fact that he's just laughing and cackling and whatever. It makes you wonder why Zeus doesn't say to him, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah, I mean, it does feel a bit like John's sort of laughing at the end of the world. Or the end of his world, anyway.
Or maybe it's due to the lack of blood? Blood loss?
I mean, yeah. At this point, he has lost a ton of blood. It's almost amazing that he's awake, given how much blood he dribbled all over the cargo hold. I guess it would have been last week.
Yeah, well, that's John McClane for you. What can you expect?
Sure.
In the first movie, he bleeds a lot. Also, does he bleed? Does he bleed in the second
Maybe
one?
He just has more blood than normal people.
It could be. Could be. I'm trying to think if in the second one he does it, a lot of bleeding. No, just his hand. Nothing.
Yeah.
Not at all. So basically,
I would argue that it definitely feels like he bleeds more in this one than the first two.
Yeah.
Like, he's definitely bleeding in the first one, but he's profusely bleeding from his arm for a large section of this one.
Yeah. And we'll only find out today why. Wait, is it today? Or actually, we're not even going to find out until tomorrow. Why he's bleeding. You just think, okay, he got injured, he got shot, he got, scraped, majorly. Who knows? But,
we'll have to talk at some point, probably, I guess, tomorrow, about how he probably should have been cut in half previously.
Correct. We will get there. We will get there. And so the minute begins with Simon basically rushing out of the hole, carrying his little laptop with him, trying to get out of there. And then John laughs, and then we see Katya on top of the ship. And she comes from one side, and then we see Simon come out from the other. And they walk towards this little speedboat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's interesting that they're both coming from different directions because, I never thought about it before. We talked about this yesterday that Simon told her, get the men off the ship and then I'll meet you at the boat. And it's like, okay, well, where's everyone else supposed to be going? So there must be more than one ship, more than one boat on the Far Swan, for them to get off of. But then also the question remains, why are they splitting up?
Well, two things. One, I would say that it is Marine Transport Canada, at least safety regulations, that there's enough launches for everyone on the boat to get off the boat in the case of an emergency. So there's presumably...
Oh, that's the Titanic.
Yeah, and there's the Titanic problem, right, that we solved by making sure there was enough lifeboats. So presumably there's launches up and down both sides of the ship. And why they're splitting up? I mean... That's what bad guys do, right? You split up and then meet up at the rendezvous to split up the booty.
Right.
Because if you went as a group,
okay, whatever.
You're a little suspicious. I mean, especially given how many people are in the group, I guess you're going to see that next week or the week after. You'll see how many people are actually in the plane.
Right.
Going all together would be a little
correct. It's the
a little.
maybe it's the idea of splitting them up so that if one of the little speedboats gets captured or blown up or something like that, then some of them can still make it out.
Yeah, exactly.
And but it also doesn't make sense to put all the commanders on the same one though.
No.
You think you would even you would even it out a little better.
I mean, yeah, you probably would. It's true.
Yeah. Right. So then Simon and Katya get on this boat, and then we hear a voice say, "Where's the gold?" And we see a bloody Targo, who in some ways even looks like he's missing his arms because of the way that the blood. It's just the cuff of his shirt. Looks like his arm is cut off.
Yeah, he's sitting in an awkward
but he's just sitting there,
covered in blood from his fight with John. And he's sort of done at this point, which is pretty great.
Right. And then, you know, she just looks at him, and Simon just looks at him, and it makes you. I really like this scene because. For someone who's never seen the movie before, it really comes as a shock. Because they already established earlier that Targo and Katya were a team.
Very clearly, like, not just a team,
you know, but
together.
They mention it, correct. They mention it, and you know, and anytime you see them, your mind goes, okay, it's the two of them together. You know, you don't think of anything, any other possibility or anything like that. And therefore, Targo also thinks that Katya will be on his side with this whole thing. And then he goes, "He's betrayed us. The containers are filled with that." And he throws one of the pieces of the scrap. And he's expecting a completely different reaction from her.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's done really, really well.
Yeah, I actually really love this moment, too, from a basic filmmaking perspective. So... you know, he throws down the scrap metal, and the camera shows her with her gun pointed at Simon, and then it shows Simon, it shows her again, and she turns, and she shoots him. And as she shoots him, it does, like, a real close-up on their, like, a real key shot on each of their eyes, in reverse shot, staring at one another, and illuminated by the gunshots. I think that's a great little moment in the film.
Right, because, I mean, again, what they're showing is... they're showing to us that the two of them are lovers, and they're the ones who, you know, have planned this together, that they were eventually going to get rid of Targo anyway.
Yeah.
You know, but then the question remains, why did they hide this all from Targo and Targo's men? Because, you know, half of the goons are Targo's men, and half of the goons are Simon's men. So Simon needed to somehow keep his men, you know, in the know without Targo's men finding out what's going on, and somehow hide all of this gold.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that.
I don't understand how they did it.
I mean, I think the part of the answer is that Targo was expecting the gold to be on the ship, and so they probably just never loaded the gold on the ship, right? They probably they loaded up the containers ahead of time, or had them preloaded with the scrap and sort of faked it, and then loaded the containers full of scrap on the ship. But I don't, that does feel a bit unsatisfying. Like, clearly there's a bait and switch somewhere along the line, but it's kind of hard to spot, correct. I would say.
Well, because they never show it to us.
Yeah.
It's always hard to spot something you're not sure.
Yes, that's true.
but the idea is, I mean, this is a big bait and switch. This isn't like a small one. Where, okay, Targo was busy with something else, so he's not going to pay attention. You got 14 dump trucks or 13 dump trucks with gold bullion on them. You got to find out. And I mean, come on, and Targo was in the dump truck with Katya and Simon.
Yeah, no, I don't have a good answer for this. I still think they must have organized some kind of spot where they could distract him long enough to get it done, but. This might be one of those moments in the film where it's best not to think about it too hard.
Oh, yeah. When you're doing a minimum minute, you always want to think about it, even because it doesn't ruin the movie.
No, for sure.
I don't see that it ruins the movie that I don't know how they did the bait and switch. I'm trying to understand how they did the bait and switch. That's my goal of trying to figure that out. But oh well. And I mean, even Katya acts this scene really, really well because you don't know her motive from the get-go. She's just like Targo doesn't know her motive either. Targo thinks that she's pulling the gun on Simon, and in the end, she turns, ever so slightly, and then just shoots Targo. So yeah, it's and I finally she smiles, she's smirking, and she shoots him 5 times, and then we see that that someone is lowering the boat into the water, and they sort of have something that they miss here, because you see that she's standing holding onto a cable. She's like on the what you would I don't know enough about boats to know the actual term, but she's standing on the hood of the boat. Was it it's not
She's
the aft,
on the
is it?
prow. She's on the prow of the
Aft is the
boat.
back, the prow. Okay, there you go. And then the shot changes, and then she's already getting off. She's on the other side.
Yeah, she's sort of
So somehow
just looking at it
she.
right now. She's sort of at the well, she's sort of yeah, she's on sort of what would be the prow of the ship, and then when it cuts, she's at the side. We're ready to step off. So there's definitely a little skip there. I'm actually more interested in the fact that they're stepping off
Right.
to launch and onto an already launched launch instead. Like they're stepping off.
Well, this is the boat that we were talking about with the other guys.
Yeah, they're stepping off.
These are the guys that she took off the ship.
Yeah, so I wonder if like. You were mentioning before something I wasn't really thinking about in the moment, that some of the men are theirs and some of the men are Targo's. So, like, is this only half the men on the boat? Or are all the men on the boat? Or are we implying that everyone except for Targo is on the team?
And the guy who showed Targo the fact that they have this this medal there.
Yeah, because I don't see.
The guy that John shot
Yeah,
two
I
weeks ago.
don't see him on the boat that they step onto the to get away. So maybe everyone turned code on Targo. Maybe no, maybe Targo was a jerk. Maybe nobody liked him.
Except for that one guy who gets shot.
Except for that one guy.
Okay, that's a fair way to look at it. Now, as the small little boat is being lowered into the water, you can actually even see the number on the boat. It says CT8023AB. I read online that there are some contradictions as to whether that's a CT or a CF. It doesn't really matter.
That is definitely a CT.
It looks to me like a CT, but I read that it was a CF, and therefore it's saying that it was a goof in the movie because it's something from California, but CT is not. CT makes sense to me. That's more like Connecticut, which definitely makes sense to where they are.
Not gonna lie, I'm looking at this right now and I'm zoomed in on it, and like, I don't see how anyone could mistake that as a CF.
I don't know either. Don't know. But when I actually looked up the serial number to try and find this boat. I couldn't find the boat, but I was able to find out what type of boat it is, which is really interesting that just by the number, it told me what type of boat this is. It's known
Oh,
as
interesting.
it's a Cobalt yacht. It's a CS23. So Cobalt boats are and what's amazing is the picture that you see on when you just search for it, looks exactly like this ship. And this ship is from 29 years ago. So I guess they haven't changed the structure of the or the layout of the ship that much in that time. Okay, so the company was founded in 1968, and in Kansas, which I always I love the fact that it's in the middle of the country. Where there's no water. That's where The headquarters are of a yacht company.
I wonder if it's just for tax purposes.
I don't know. I
Or
mean,
maybe.
as a kid, I was very much into G.I. Joe, and I would always read about the history and stuff like that. The action figures or whatever from the comics or whatever it is. One of the guys was this Coast Guard guy named Cutter, and they mentioned the fact that he was born, in the furthest point in the U.S. from any ocean, in the middle of Kansas. And it was always his dream to, hit the ocean, even though he lived so far away from it. So, for me to see that the headquarters of Cobalt is in Kansas, I was like, that's just hilarious for me.
It doesn't seem likely, does it? I don't think there's even. Is there even a river in Kansas? I don't actually know the answer to that.
Don't know. By the mid 2010s, they were making 2,000 boats a year.
That's a boat.
And it was all being made in Kansas.
Huh.
And they on an annual basis were generating about $140 million in sales.
Yeah, that's successful.
And they had they had 24 different boat models, and they were selling them in 132 locations in the US, Canada, and overseas. So yeah, it's very cool. They were bought out in 2017 by Malibu Boats for $130 million, and Malibu Boats realized the potential of them, that they still sell the version of the Cobalt boats under the name Cobalt. And how much do you think a boat like this would cost?
Oh, it's probably
What's
like
the
maybe a
average
small
price?
car would
Let's
be
put it
my
that way.
guess. Boats are kind of expensive, so I don't know, 20 grand. I was
How
gonna say
much?
20 grand. I have no idea what boats cost.
20 grand. You can buy a new car for 20 grand.
Well,
Okay.
any car, but yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, the average price for one of these type of boats is
Yeah, that's a little more than I guess,
$120,000.
which makes sense because I don't have any idea what boats cost.
Yeah. Neither did I before I looked it
Even
up.
though I, live in a coastal city and grew up on the island, I have no idea what boats cost.
Well, because you didn't need to buy a boat.
No, and it's always been sound fiscal advice to not do that, so I've never intended to.
Makes sense. Yeah. The other ship comes up next to their ship, and Simon jumps aboard, and it looks as if Katya also jumps aboard, which means that they're just leaving the body of Targo in this other ship. Which then makes you wonder, okay, if the whole idea was to split up so that, they might not both get caught. They've just thrown that idea out the window.
Yeah, it's a little weird, isn't it? You'd think that they would. I guess maybe they must be close to wherever they're rendezvousing at this point.
And then we can actually see the name of the ship that the second boat. It's the Polly. Now, I can't tell if that's an R or a K.
I think it's
What
K.
would you think? Right. Okay. Well, I looked up both and I couldn't find either of them. Like when I looked up the Far Swan, I was able to find out where the ship was on the very day that we were recording. But here I can't find the Polly K. The only thing I found with a ship called Polly was something that was only made in 1998. So it's obviously not the same thing. But yeah, they just speed away.
Can't find anything
And
about this
we
boat,
can.
but it is a nice looking boat,
Right, it's true. Did you count how many goons are left on the ship?
How many goons are on the Poly K? There's two,
Yeah.
four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, nine goons plus Simon and Katya, I believe. If I'm looking at this right.
Right. That's exactly what I got also. Yep. Nine plus one. So again, these must all be Simon's men. They apparently got rid of Targo's men, as we said. And they're on their way out. And then we're back to John and Zeus. And then Zeus starts by saying, "If I hadn't have saved your ass, I wouldn't be sitting here with you. About to blow up with 100 million in gold."
Mm-hmm.
And then John looks at him and says, "Yeah, well, I got some bad news." And then he gets cut off. So we're going to have to wait until tomorrow to find out what that bad news is. But I like the fact that John always has a proper retort.
Yeah, I mean, he always knows what's going on. He's a...
That's right.
He gets beat up, but he's not a dummy. He's an idiot.
Nope.
But he's not a dummy.
That is true. Okay, do you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script? Or actually, there is no script. Before we move along?
No, I think that's pretty well everything to cover, I think.
Okay, so every Wednesday we have a segment called Jesus Hump Day, where my guests will give their top five Samuel L. Jackson performances. So, Matthew, why don't you tell us what you got? Why don't you start at number five and work your way up?
This one was a little easier than yesterday's. So, starting with number five, we'll talk about Jurassic Park, in which Samuel L. Jackson played John Arnold, the sort of head of operations of the park. It's not the biggest role. It's not the meatiest role he ever had. But he's sort of wonderfully cast as this, like, long-suffering operations guy. And every line in the movie he has is basically iconic, but it's where we get "hold on to your butts" from. And he also has he doesn't really have a death scene, but he has one of the lead-ups to a great scare, which I really like.
Well, he doesn't have a death scene, but you still see his arm.
Yeah, and this was also one of the films that, like, again, this Jurassic Park was 93. It was one of the ones where I was I was like 12 or 13 at this point, but it was one of the ones, I was already starting to be a film nerd, and this was one of the ones where I was like, that guy's going places, you know?
And you were right.
My number four will be one of his appearances with Quentin Tarantino, and that would be in Django Unchained as Steven, the head slave in Leonardo DiCaprio's household in that movie. I think a lot of people, and myself included, would probably be tempted to choose Jules Winfield from Pulp Fiction as their Tarantino choice here. But I actually think that's...
Well, you don't have to have one Tarantino choice. You can even say the piano guy in Kill Bill 2. I mean...
Fair enough. So if I was going to have more than one Tarantino choice, though, they would definitely not be in my top five. They would be maybe probably in my top 10, but not in my top five. But I think Steven is a far more interesting character than Jules. And I think it is his best villain performance. Steven is wonderfully compelling. This is the one that I thought he was sort of robbed for in terms of like awards attention. My number three is actually, I'm willing to bet it's one that basically nobody else has on their list, but there was a Canadian film released in the late 90s called The Red Violin, in which Samuel L. Jackson plays an expert in violins called Charles Moritz. This is a film that I adore. It's one of my all-time favorites, very artistic, sort of anthology-esque story that follows a violin through several hundred years of history. And he is the anchor that holds the whole thing together. And it's a wonderful, very low-key, very understated performance, very different than most of the things you would associate Samuel L. Jackson with. And I've always really loved him in it.
And you would be correct. You were the only person to have it on your list so far.
Yeah, I mean, it's Canadian film. It's out of print on physical. I don't know where you can stream it at this point.
I've seen it. I actually enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of an obscure choice, though. Like, I don't know that many of the people who have seen it. So it's, but I've always really liked it. My number two is actually Die Hard with a Vengeance. I think this is his best action role. I think he has a wonderful chemistry with Bruce Willis. And it has always bugged me that he did not show up in parts 4 or 5. I really would have liked to see more of Zeus in following entries in this franchise, even if I wouldn't necessarily have liked to see some of the following entries in this franchise.
Okay.
And my number one is the Rennie Harlan directed, Shane Black written 90s action classic, The Long Kiss Goodnight, in which he plays private investigator and notorious con man Mitch Hennessy. This is not his most action-y role, but the action in it is great. And I, as a person who really adores Shane Black's dialogue, it has never sounded better coming out of anyone's mouth other than Samuel L. Jackson. He delivers some of the best Shane Black jokes are in this movie, and all of them are from Samuel L. Jackson. And if you've never seen it, I assume you've seen it, but if for anyone who's listening, if you've never seen it, this movie should be at the top of this. You know, some people, this is actually one of those films where this might be minorly controversial on this show in particular, but a lot of people associate Die Hard with Christmas, but this is actually my Christmas action movie.
Okay.
The one that I watch every year.
That's fair. All right. Excellent. Thank you for that, for that top five. So, Matthew, would like to once again tell people where they can find Matthew Simpson.
Yeah, one more time. I am the co-founder and co-host of the Awesome Friday podcast, which is you can find anywhere that you listen to podcasts. We're on basically every platform, everyone that I've checked, and in which we review two new movies every week. At the time of this recording, the most recent one we recorded and published was on A Quiet Place, Day One, and Deadpool and Wolverine. And we'll, again, two new movies every week, so it'll be something for next week. I also am a freelance writer, so I write for a number of outlets around the internet, and you can keep up with the easiest way to keep up with all of that is via my personal website, which is stretched.ca. And last but not least, you can find me on all of the socials that matter, which would be, at this point, Threads and Instagram, basically. That's Matthew AF. If you search for that on Blue Sky and Twitter and the other ones, I should come up as well.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
I'm marching home again, hoorah, hoorah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.